evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, October 16, 2020. Some students at the University of Juba are calling for mass disobedience across South Sudan next week.
And the citizens of South Sudan have to stand up for their rights, claiming for their rights in an admirable and peaceful way. And with this, we call on the citizens also, if government doesn't want to listen to us, seriously, we will call for a civil disobedience sooner.
And 40 South Sudanese students are stuck in Cuba and Zimbabwe.
The situation is very hard because here in Cuba we don't have an embassy, we don't have what to eat, we don't have money, our family they can't send us money, and we don't have something for transport.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some students from the University of Juba are calling on the government of South Sudan to address the economic challenges facing the country. The students issued a statement calling for mass disobedience across South Sudan next week. Thon Dio Ngor is a student of law at the University of Juba. He says the government of South Sudan should listen to the cries of the people about prices of food in the market.
We want South Sudanese to get on and apply the action. The action that we are calling for is our citizens. Make sure that the time has already gone. This is the time that we should claim our rights ourselves. If government doesn't listen to us, the suffering that we have been undergoing through for all these years, therefore the students, the civil society and the citizens of South Sudan have to stand up for their rights, claiming for their rights in an admirable and peaceful way. And with this, we call on the citizen also, if government doesn't want to listen to us, seriously, we will call for a civil disobedience sooner.
You sound like you are giving the government some warnings here. You're saying that you want the government to listen to you. What do you want the government to do for you?
The government actually has failed for quite some time to address the economic issue. Now the economic meltdown has gone beyond the capacity of the government. We need the government to seek for an urgent solution as it is addressed to make sure that the market is stabilized. Some of the things that we have called for, we say that there is a need for reform in the economic sector. We call for an urgent shutdown of the black market that is riding up everything. Should government listen to us as students and as civil society at large, we'll be very glad as we see the urgent solution is well founded by the government and make sure that the economy is stabilized and people are at the right channel.
You are speaking to me at a rally where students are talking to themselves, and here you are saying that you want to appeal to the people of South Sudan. How would the people hear you when you've closed yourself inside a compound?
This is the first move taken by some of the students who are organized to make sure that they will alert the general public. This is just the starting point where we need every student to make sure that they will be on the street as soon as possible. If the government fails to answer the grievances they have presented, the solution they have proposed for the government to do, if the government fails to do this, they will be in collaboration with the civil society. We know our civil society are looking forward to have a possible solution soon. So we are also able to be on the street talking to our people, calling for the people to do what is right for them.
I can hear the background noise of people speaking at a rally. How many students have turned out to listen to you?
Actually, a massive number of students have turned out. If you can see now, come to the campus, every student is willing and eager to listen to us. We are here. This is just the beginning, and they are even pushing us that for the rest of our students that are not here, they are able to come. Now, this campus is the main campus that the rally is going to, and also the Western campus, there are people taking over and they will soon be joining together and can send their bosses.
Can you be a bit specific and concise? It looks like you are talking to me about many issues at the same time, and would you like to make it clear to our listeners, what is it that you are asking from the government? What is your ask?
Our plans are actually based on this this group, and if I could, I can mention one of them, is asking the general public and to stay at home on Monday as a general strike in order for the government to, search for a possible solution. We are also calling for the government to embark on the diversification of the economy with a particular emphasis on production of goods and services. This will elevate the enormous pressure on the foreign exchange reserves and as well create employment for masses of jobless.
That's Ton Die Ngor, a student of law at the University of Juba. He spoke with me earlier today from Juba. Still on student matters, around 40 South Sudanese students on scholarship in Cuba and Zimbabwe say they are stuck in Harare and Havana with no money for food, transport, medicine, and return tickets. Noer Deng Deng, who graduated from a medical school in Cuba, is appealing to the government of South Sudan to provide tickets so that students can return home. A director for training and external relations at the Ministry of Higher Education, Science and Technology says his office has submitted the students' request for air tickets and stipends to the Ministry of Finance. But the undersecretary in the Ministry of Finance says the students in Zimbabwe and Cuba are not on South Sudan government scholarship. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
28 South Sudanese students are stranded in Zimbabwe and 11 more are stuck in Cuba. Some students graduated in July of 2019, while others graduated in July this year but are unable to return home because they say they have no money to buy return tickets. Noer Deng Deng, who graduated with a medical degree from Cuba's University of Medical Sciences in Pinar del Rio last year, is still stranded in Cuba. He says he and other South Sudanese students are suffering.
Our situation is very hard because here in Cuba we don't have an embassy. We don't have what to eat. We don't have money. Our family, they can't send us money. And we don't have something for transport. Even we have our brother is sick since last year, and the diagnosis schizophrenia, like a psychiatric problem, and we don't have anything to do for him.
In Zimbabwe, South Sudanese students have occupied the South Sudan embassy and shut down its operations to protest what they say are dire living conditions. John Mabil graduated with a law degree from Zimbabwe's Midlands State University in July this year. He is calling on the South Sudan government to clear the arrears students owe to various Zimbabwean universities so students can obtain their certificates of degrees and return home.
You know, the government has not done anything, especially the Ministry of Higher Education, which is actually in charge, the very ministry which brought us here. As someone who is in charge of the ministry, you have to plan for this particular group of people who want to go back home. We did not come on our own. We are brought here by the government.
Charles Lotara, a South Sudanese who graduated from the Great Zimbabwe University last year and has since returned to Juba, says more than 170 students who graduated from six different Zimbabwean state universities over the past few years have not received their certificates or transcripts because the South Sudan government has yet to clear student arrears with those universities.
The government of South Sudan owes the government of Zimbabwe about $2 million in arrears. These arrears are divided into three categories. We have tuition fees, we have feeding, we have money for accommodation. And without that, students cannot get their certificates and transcripts.
Lotara says unless the South Sudan government pays what it owes the Zimbabwean government, the 29 students stuck in Zimbabwe will return without their academic documents. Dr. Justo Wanijada, Director General for Training and External Relations and Acting Undersecretary in South Sudan's Higher Education Ministry, admits South Sudan owes Zimbabwe arrears totaling about $2 million, including student stipends, which have not been sent since 2018. Jada says his ministry submitted student claims for airline tickets, stipends, and university arrears to the Ministry of Finance for the last 2 years. He blames the finance ministry for not releasing the money.
We always submit the claim for the air ticket and other pocket money to the Ministry of Finance. And we have been submitting this almost for the last 2 years, but no money came from the Ministry of Finance to bring this student back here.
Ochun Carlo, Undersecretary for Planning in South Sudan's Finance Ministry, asserts that the students stranded in Cuba and Zimbabwe did not go to those countries on South Sudan government scholarships.
How were these scholarships awarded? It is not the government who sent them. There must have been some basic agreement about some scholarships. These students went. Either they went on their own or they received a scholarship from that government. Okay? Mm-hmm. This is how normal it works. If the government offers a scholarship, then they must ensure sufficient availability of funds to cater for this. This is where I come in and say we don't have that in the plan.
Carlos says although students were not fully sponsored by the South Sudan government, the finance ministry has always sent money to them whenever there are sufficient funds to do so. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says more than 25,000 South Sudanese have returned home since the parties that signed the revitalized peace agreement formed the transitional government of national unity earlier this year. UNHCR official at the Nimule border crossing point says his office registers about 60 households returning voluntarily from Uganda to South Sudan on daily basis. For VOA News, Onen Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
38-year-old Richard Okelo and two family members are registering at the UNHCR office in Nimule. He says he and his family decided to voluntarily return to South Sudan from the Kirandong refugee settlement because there is not enough food at the camp. He says when the UN World Food Program reduced food rations in May, it became difficult to feed his family.
To some few of us who have a very huge family, it's not easy to us to manage, to feed the family, because we do not have any external assistance apart from this food that we receive from the settlement.
23-year-old Amor Jok says she and her family, husband and three children arrived in Nimule on October 9th after leaving a settlement camp in Uganda's Adjumani district. Jok also says she and her family left their refugee camp because the food rations were not enough to feed her family of five. Jok is appealing to aid agencies to support returning refugees so they can work and reintegrate into their communities.
If the UN provides tailoring machines to women, it will be helpful. The machines will help women to be productive, earn some little income, and be self-reliant when the UN leaves. Also, if the UN takes youth to be trained as solar technicians, they can become self-reliant.
Adilan Bashir, who works for the South Sudan Older People's Organization, OSHOPO, registers returning refugees at the Nimule border crossing point on behalf of UNHCR. Bashir says returning refugees are coming from northern Uganda's Rhino, Kirandongo, Palabek and Invepi settlement camps, among others.
20% of the people are whom we receive in a day. 90% of the people are going to Juba. Most of their issues is that they are going to treat maybe some sicknesses and then others are going to reunion.
Bashir says some refugees tell him they are returning home because life in the refugee camps has become increasingly difficult. Julia Rafali, the UNHCR spokesperson in South Sudan, says the humanitarian agency recorded more than 6,000 returns from Uganda in July and August alone. More than 19,000 others returned to South Sudan earlier this year, according to Rafali. She says refugees are returning home in droves for many reasons, including improved security in South Sudan and easier transportation within the refugee hosting countries. Rafael says he and Shira is supporting small community-based projects in some areas of returns and advocate for other groups to help where there is a lack of support for returnee reintegration. She says although South Sudan has made considerable progress in several areas after the signing of the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement, the issues that forced South Sudanese to flee are yet to be fully resolved.
This is why UNHCR has been maintaining a non-return advisory to South Sudan. This means that UNHCR is currently neither supporting nor assisting in sustainable returns of refugees and is not providing individual assistance to returnees at this stage, as we do not feel that the situation is conducive for returns.
Rafale says South Sudanese refugees have the right to return to South Sudan if they decide to do so voluntarily, but says the coronavirus pandemic is yet another challenge to voluntary returns.
Therefore, UNHCR and the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission strongly suggest to South Sudanese to remain where they are to protect themselves, their families and their communities.
Rafael says the UN Refugee Agency, the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, and their partners have verified more than 205,000 returnees after the peace deal was signed. For VOA News, I am Onen Walter Solomon in Juba.
One of the mediators of the Sudan Comprehensive Peace Agreement says his team is impressed by the move to incorporate the agreement into Sudan's constitution. Diouma Tok, who is in Khartoum, says he will meet government officials and representatives of other political parties to discuss agenda for negotiations with the SPLM North faction led by Abdulaziz Al-Hilo. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
The South Sudanese mediators arrived in Khartoum early this week and were led by the chief mediator Tout Galwak to assess the progress made in implementing the peace agreement. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus Thursday in Khartoum, Diouma Tok, spokesperson of the South Sudanese committee that mediated the talks, says his team is in Khartoum to follow up on the first phase of the implementation of the Juba peace deal and to ensure that the deal is reconciled with the country's constitution.
We came to Khartoum in order to hand over the final document of the peace agreement and discuss with the authorities the commencements of the implementation of the agreement, especially its incorporation into the constitutional document.
Earlier this week, the Sudanese transitional government adopted the peace agreement mediated in Juba and incorporated it into the constitution, which will govern the country for the next 39 months of the transitional period. Mothok praised the move, calling it a good beginning.
During the negotiation, the mediation committee depended very much on the political will that was shown by the parties, and we wanted this political will to continue during the implementation phase.
Speaking to South Sudan in Focus earlier this week, Muhammad Saleh, a member of the technical team tasked with incorporating the agreement into Sudan's constitution, said now that the work is completed, the technical team expects the government to announce major changes into the executive body in the coming days. Under the incorporated document, the head of the Sovereign Council should add 3 more members to the current 11 and dissolve the existing 18 states. Sudan will then be divided into 8 regions. Saleh also said he expects a general amnesty to be declared for all members of the armed groups who participated in the Juba peace deal. Mothok says his group is in Khartoum to meet with government officials and representatives of other political forces to gather input on the proposed agenda that is supposed to be tabled during the pre-negotiation conference with the SPLM North faction led by Abdulaziz Al-Hilu. He says mediators will organize a workshop which is expected to get underway on October 21st in Juba.
The workshop is meant to examine the experiences of different countries in the issue of secularism. In other words, the separation of state from the religion. And this is one of the issues that the SPLM North presented in its DOP last year, and the parties could not address it until now.
Regarding ongoing tensions in the Eastern Sudan among the Bija community, who said they were misrepresented during the Juba peace talks, Mathok says the mediation team is aware of this concern, and that is why the eastern track was left open and would be settled during the upcoming conference. He called on the traditional leaders and intellectuals of the Bija community to remain calm and prepare for the conference.
This conference is supposed to add whatever missing in the agreement. The agreement is a victory to people of Eastern Sudan and not a property of individuals or particular community.
A team from the Sudan Revolutionary Front, which represented 9 armed groups that signed the agreement with the Sudanese government, are currently in the Darfur region to educate IDPs on details of the peace deal. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the Red Cross sounds an alarm bell on the situation in Sudan. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you reward yourself?
I would go and buy myself maybe a pair of shoes I always desire to get. I'll go and have a meal I always desire to get. Or anything. Depends on what I've achieved.
By spoiling myself. I'm a girl. I go buy myself clothes, shoes, do my hair, my nails. Basic things that will make me look good and happy at the end of the day.
I cook a good meal. I sit down with a chill drink.
My work involves very hard work, so I get very tired. So I reward myself once every month. I do that by swimming and relaxing at the beach with my family.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The head of the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies warns Sudan's fragile political stability could be at risk if the desperate needs of hundreds of thousands of flood victims are not urgently addressed. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Severe floods have affected nearly 900,000 Sudanese people, reportedly killing more than 120, rendering thousands of families homeless and destroying farmlands and livelihoods. Jagan Chapagan is the Secretary General of the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, and he has just returned from a 4-day assessment mission to Sudan. He says the impact of the worst floods in 3 decades is far beyond anything he had expected.
I visited an area called Algamayer on the outskirts of Khartoum. Homes, infrastructure, and crops have been destroyed. The conditions are simply appalling. It is boiling hot, more than 40 degrees, and there is no shade. The camp we visited is surrounded by stagnant water and mosquitoes are rife.
Chapagand says the only access to clean water or sanitary toilets is at the neighboring school, which is closed at night. He says people also lack sufficient shelter, toilets, and mosquito nets, which means malaria is rampant and the risk of cholera and other diseases is high. He says children comprise about half of the flood victims and are particularly vulnerable. This humanitarian crisis, he says, also is taking a heavy toll on pregnant and lactating women, the elderly, and disabled. He tells VOA he's very concerned by the level of anger and frustration he encountered and its potential impact on the country's stability.
There was a locust infestation in the beginning of the year. There has been, of course, impact of the COVID. And, of course, with the political change, the expectation of the populations and the governments are very, very high. Actually, extremely high, you could see. But I do believe that the pressure on the government could be very significantly increasing in coming months if these desperate needs are not addressed.
Sudan's transitional government, which took office last year after longtime leader Omar al-Bashir was ousted, is struggling to build a stable political system and end political violence in the impoverished country. The International Red Cross has received just 15% of the $13 million appeal it launched in September to provide health care, shelter, water and sanitation, and other essential relief for 200,000 Sudanese flood victims. Secretary General Chapagan says it is urgent to act now. He warns the failure of the international community to support this life-saving operation will have fearful consequences for many thousands of people. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
VOA always delivers your favorite programs, news, music, entertainment, and sports shows. Starting Monday, October 5th, our flagship news show, South Sudan in Focus, will be moving to 16:30 UTC, followed by your favorite sports show, The Sunny Side of Sports, at 1700 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Lenore Moudou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Before we end this show, I have a special announcement for you. This program can now be heard in South Sudan at 7:30 p.m. local time on VOA affiliate stations. Please inform your friends and relatives. That's all we prepared for you this Friday, when I leave you in a dancing mood with the song Makolongulu by BM. We have been listening to BM from the DRC with the song Makolongulu. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you must leave your home. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.